There's lots of places you get potatoes from, actually. It's Canada.
Canadian potatoes?
There's lots of them.
We call them Canadians.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dimebag Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson, and we're here with our full staff. We have Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Peter Bard.
Connecticut was revolutionary.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
Kevin Meacham.
Hi.
And our producer, Alex Cullen.
Hello, hello.
And this edition of the Dimebag Podcast is the first time we can say this. It is proudly brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. Woo! One of my favorite places in the world, so I'm pretty pumped about that. Do we need to do like a Blue Apron-esque reading of their menu? maybe later. Maybe at the mid-show break.
Yeah.
Megan, next time I'm in town, we got to go there.
All right, do it. Let's do it.
I got to try these dirt wings I keep hearing about.
I'm about it. We'll make it happen.
They're made with bits of real dirt.
Yeah.
No. It's not the story of the dirt wings.
Don't tell malicious lies about them.
They have delicious, famous wings. We're going to eat them.
And if it is dirt, it's the best dirt.
It's good dirt. And they have lots of dirt. They have lots of beer, which goes well if you have to listen to this podcast. So I don't even remember when the last podcast we did was, but things got crazy, really crazy since then. So Glenn Miller, assistant coach, fired Chilius.
Asked to leave.
Sure. Half the roster is gone. Vance Jackson, Steve Enoch, Juwan Durham, Mekhi Ashton-Langford, their star recruit, gone.
Sports are a diversion, and we should all focus on things in life that we can be productive at.
The class struggle, to name one of them.
Not great, Bob.
Ugh. Everything's the worst. I think we can state bad. That. Yeah.
It was interesting. By the
I
time
cry
Durham
a lot alone in my room.
That's Russ's diversion from sports, actually. It was funny. By the time Durham announced he was transferring, my reaction was, all right, whatever. I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, any one of those moves happening would have been enough to send us all into like a slight panic. But then the fact that like one of them kept happening day after day, by the fifth time, you're just like so numb. It's like, whatever. We're not a school anymore. Okay.
Nothing matters. Nothing matters at all.
I wasn't concerned about Enoch. I don't think he's good enough for this level. When Jackson declared, and it was clear he was going to, he played a lot this year and he was going to play again next year, and he left anyway, that was when I was like, this is now like a bad thing.
Well, that's kind of the theme, right? Is that a lot of these guys, there was such openings for minutes for all four of these guys. And so I guess my question for you is, what else do you think is happening here? I mean, Vance Jackson's explanation that he wasn't being used to his talent level seems kind of crazy to me, considering he was used probably far more than he was expected to in the beginning of the year because of all the injuries.
So if he thinks he's a wing, and he would not be the first confused stretch four to think he was really a three, and maybe he wants to go somewhere where they'll let him play the wing and they'll let him handle the ball. And it's clear that Ollie was not going to let him do that. He's going to let him catch and shoot and try and rebound a little bit.
Which is clearly what he's best suited for, frankly. Yeah. He's not fast enough to beat somebody off the dribble. He's not. He's a pick and pop guy.
One of the things about this season is that Ollie got a really long, good look at a lot of these guys that he otherwise wouldn't have gotten a long, good look at. And I wouldn't be surprised if at least like Enoch and Durham turned out to be like Ollie saying, seek a transfer, try to get in a different direction, because
Enoch maybe, but not. I don't think that's realistic with Durham.
I don't know. Durham looked terrible in every minute he played this year.
Durham was considerably better than Enoch and has a much better pedigree and has a much better reason for not having been good, and it's still a year younger. The guy missed most of the latter half of his high school career, and this was his first season fully back.
Was he fully back, though? I mean, his minutes were clearly limited.
He played all year. Will he be in better shape next year? I don't know. But we did not have the talent coming in to tell him we didn't have room for him.
Not only that, but if you're Juwan Durham or Steve Enoch and you're looking at this roster coming in, if you do the bare minimum amount of off-season preparation and development, you're the starting center.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think that's what puzzled me the most, is because you knew these guys were going to get minutes next year.
And like, neither of those guys is going to a Power 5 program and starting.
How possible is it, though, that Enoch and Durham, or maybe one of them, looked at the coaching staff, looked at the fact that Amita Brima was here for 4 years and pretty much left the same player he was when he started, and thought, this is not the place where I could really develop and grow
my game? He was actually probably worse than the player he started as.
He did not get worse.
Brima got worse technically, right, from his sophomore to his senior season.
Yeah,
he got better as a freshman from a sophomore and then declined.
Yeah, but how much of that sophomore season is skewed by the 40-point game?
That's a great question.
I think that's, well, because he will.
Or just Daniel Hamilton, really.
He went from a 24 PER as a sophomore to 22 as a junior.
I mean, he was getting a lot of laps from D-Ham his sophomore year. Like, that's the difference, really.
My guess is he rebounded slightly better this year because Daniel Hamilton was not on the roster, and he was less efficient on offense because Daniel Hamilton was not on the roster.
Yeah, that's fair.
I can't think of a player at UConn that was more dependent on another player than Brima was on Hamilton.
I think it's interesting, too, that like they got rid of the strength and conditioning coach, and I kind of wonder how much that is playing into this. Like, Brima and Durham and Larrier, like, all really looked like they need to spend some time in the weight room, and I'm like, these guys are, like, they look small. Like, they look like their joints could disintegrate at any moment. And, I mean, I spent the entire year watching Brima get pushed off the post every single time. He could never get positioning, falling on his ass constantly. Like, he just wasn't strong enough to deal with anybody. And I can't help but notice that, you know, is a big problem in their development. And then they got rid of the strength and conditioning coach.
It is kind of funny. Yeah. Can you remember a single player in Ollie's tenure so far? I mean, I feel like we get the typical, it's like the baseball spring training story, right? Best shape of his life. We get like three of those every offseason for UConn as well, of Kenton Facey put on 20 pounds of muscle, or
Rodney Purvis.
You saw how ridiculously trim and fit Purvis got before this year. Has any of that transferred to production on the court?
I think our teams. One of the things about the way we've conditioned.
Actually improved because of his body, or do you think he improved because he played 25 minutes a game?
I think it was both. I think he got better as a player. I think his size helped him play better, helped him get a lot more rebounds than he would have otherwise, and
he had the lowest rebounding rate of his career this year.
Well, he spent more time on the floor, but also he wasn't fouling people, which...
He also had the lowest fouling rate of his career.
I would imagine being in better shape is going to help you.
Well, I think one of the hallmarks of Ollie teams is he really likes his guys to be in great condition. Mm-hmm. So, like, he wants guys to be able to run for days. And a side effect of that is that you've got a bunch of guys who are light. When you're conditioning like that, you lose weight. You don't maintain muscle mass as easily part of your entire practice regimen is a ton of running.
Okay, so, counterpoint to that is that Kevin Ollie won the Husky run.
I mean, I think the conditioning...
Yeah, they don't run that well.
The conditioning, I think, is fine in and of itself. I mean, we've seen now, even in this year's AAC tournament, when they were, you know, after this season where seven guys played all the minutes, they did not really look that tired. And that was the same story, obviously, in 2014 when their long postseason run, but also last year in the AAC tournament after the 4-0 game, they came right back and looked fresh as hell. Like, they looked fresher than Temple or whoever else they played. Was it Memphis?
Memphis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly there's an advantage to that, but obviously it has to be balanced, especially the bigs. Like, it didn't do him a whole lot of good to have Amita Brima be the second fastest guy on the team when he was getting shoved five rows deep into the stands on every defensive rebound.
Yeah. He just spent way too damn much time on the floor, man. Like, you can't have your center, like, falling on the floor constantly.
That being said, and I'm probably offline, not in print because I think it's mean, but I've been a pretty big critic of Brima over the last couple of years. But it's going to be really frustrating this next year to watch UConn's defense without that shot-blocking presence in there. I think we're going to be in for... I think we'll appreciate Amita Brima a lot more 12 months from now than we are right now.
Probably true.
It's probably true.
I think it was really jarring watching Gonzaga's run through the NCAA tournament with their bigs, with Karnowski and Collins, and just noting the difference between them and Brima offensively when they catch the ball in the post, clearly having an idea of what to do and having, like Meacham said, two post moves that they could go to. That you, I mean, Brima catches the ball and he's falling backwards, throwing up a brick if he can't dunk it. And it, just the difference between him and the Gonzaga bigs was almost surprising.
The number of times I was like, man, I wish Karnowski played for our team, hurt me on the inside, but also was super, super true. Like, like he'd do something. I'm like, that would have been nice if anybody on our team could do that.
You're talking about Karnowski. I spent like the last week reading fifth-year transfers from Green Bay and Bradley, being like, man, I wish their centers were on our team. Let alone the center from national runner-up.
Would love us to get Cantor.
Hell yeah.
I don't think he's not a center, is he?
Sure he is.
So like, oh, he is?
Well, center enough.
He
center
would
enough
be for
the
us,
AAC. Yeah.
Yeah. Our biggest guy next year is 6'9".
Cobb is 6'9" and like 270.
Yeah, he's Rakeem Lubin.
He's kind of like Ollie going in the extreme other direction. Like, what if we got a guy who couldn't run for more than 5 seconds at a time, who was just really big?
Cantor's 6'9", 245. That's Kareem Cantor. He played at Green Bay. He's a transfer. He's the brother of Enes Kanter.
Is he as shitty on defense as Enes Kanter?
I don't know. Probably. But he can rebound at Green Bay.
Tearing up the Horizon League.
That's right. He had the best total rebound percentage in the Horizon League.
Oh, really? Well, maybe then.
I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in any position to knock the best rebounder in the Horizon League.
Correct. Would anyone on our team be the best? I guess Facey might be the best rebounder in the Horizon League, but
he's not coming back next
year.
He's
not. So wait, let's talk about Ashton Langford a little bit, because that one caught me by surprise big time. And it seems like either he or the coaching staff basically boiled this down to a competition for one roster spot between him and Christian Vitell, which seems kind of crazy to me.
No sense.
Right? I mean, even if you're Mekhi Ashton Langford, you're a top 40 recruit, and you're scared of competing for minutes with...
with Christian Vitell.
Right, in a lineup that plays three guards and has five players on the roster?
Who's going to get a ton of minutes next year?
Yeah, it makes no sense, because now UConn only has three guards.
Like, and one of them has shoulders made out of mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Even if it was the fourth guard on the depth chart, he was still going to get a ton of minutes.
Yeah, I mean, they play a lot of guard minutes
somewhere else.
The only solace I'm taking in this right now is, like, you know, we never know with recruits. It's entirely possible that Mekhi Ashton Langford is not as good as his ranking might suggest. Meanwhile, we've seen what Vitell is capable of, and he might improve, and we kind of like what we see so far. So,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Vitell, bird in the hand and all that, but I do sort of wonder maybe if he thought Jalen was going to go, and then Jalen was like, no, I'm staying, and that was what made him change his mind.
That's probably a more likely scenario, actually.
Because that would seem to make sense, because, like, maybe he thought Jalen was going to peace out, and Jalen turned out is actually not stupid and decides he's going to chill. And I got to give him credit for, like, saying it now. And also, he probably, as Tyler pointed out, is exhausted and needs a break. But I kind of can't, like, wonder if that was MAL was thinking that he was going to get more minutes because Jalen Adams is going to be gone.
I think maybe he was thinking Jalen Adams probably should be gone by now, but he didn't get all that much better.
Right.
I don't want to go play for a coach where people don't seem to get better.
Or a coach that can't put people in the NBA because he can't. He put Shabazz in the NBA. Full stop.
Not really.
Well, you know what I mean? That's it. All these guys where Kevin Ollie has this NBA pedigree and guys have been coming in saying, I want to be trained and get ready to go to the NBA. And he's not, the guys that are coming in with that, you know, as their explanation, are not going to the NBA.
Something's missing.
So if I had to guess, right, I would guess Ashton Langford probably has a 1 or maximum 2 year plan, which is probably the same as Hamilton obviously had. It's probably the same as Adams had. And he's watching Jalen Adams surrounded by a bunch of guys who are losing 19 games in a year. And looking at the recent history of UConn guards, Guard University, and the last guy they got drafted was in 2014. And it's a fair question if he started looking around and being like, is this where I can get to the NBA fastest, which I'm sure is his only consideration.
I think it's a kind of a combination of the two, at least it could be, looking at the lack of success with the guards in the last couple of years, and also looking at the fact that he's not going to start on a team in a crap conference. you know, that's not on ESPN that many times, you can kind of understand, at least from that perspective, why you might go to a Providence where you'll probably start right away. Providence doesn't have a ton coming back.
I would assume.
And they'll be on TV 25 times a year.
The other thing is that he sees the presumed starting center and the three-point shooter on the team, Bolt, which indicates a problem within the team. And, you know,
do we really think Enoch was the presumed starting center?
Probably. Well, who else was at that point?
Anyone else. I was Russ. Thinking probably Cobb or Durham. I mean, Enoch was the worst player on the team this year. He's above no one on the depth chart.
I mean, it was so wide open. Anyone could have taken it with a decent summer. No reason that couldn't have been Enoch other than he's proven that he wasn't very good. But I guess the larger point I want to get back to is with all these guys exiting, and now we've seen some very subtle Drake lyric-based shade going back and forth between other guys on Twitter. Was there a culture problem that is now just being wiped out? Are we getting a clean slate because there was just fundamental issues with personalities on the roster?
Well, Glenn Miller being asked to leave was the first domino to fall, right? Anytime you have an organization and you have some leadership exiting, these kinds of things can happen. And there's going to be like a painful period before you get the new guy in to stabilize things.
I'm pretty pumped Miller's gone, to be honest.
We've been saying for some time that it doesn't seem like big men ever develop at our program anymore. So Glenn Miller is exactly the guy that you get rid of.
How much is not developing big men and how much is not recruiting really good big men?
Yeah.
Really
so,
talented big men.
So Chilius maybe solves half of that equation. My concern right now is that, so who on the staff now is in charge of developing big men?
I wonder if that's more they're like getting like geographic recruiting. Cause I mean, isn't that the whole thing? It's knowing the coaches and the AAU teams and like being all like involved in the local scene. You know, if you've got a West Coast guy and an East Coast guy and I don't know where the hell Killings is from, like.
Well, Killings is a Philadelphia guy, which would.
And
Chilius
is a DC guy.
You got a Northeast guy, a Southeast guy, and a West Coast guy. So,
but again,
I don't know.
I mean, bringing in these guys is one thing, but if they're not getting any better and can't get into the NBA.
And if they're losing games.
Right.
Here's the thing about Chilius, though, is Chilius is the kind of guy who wins recruiting battles for guys. It doesn't matter how you coach them. They're going to go to the NBA.
I would like that.
So if you can land, I mean, he lands top five guys on a semi-regular basis. If we can get a couple of guys at that level, and they can, you know, even just perform to basic expectations, and they end up being lottery picks after their freshman year, you start to get some talent back into the league, you know.
So now that we talked about all the exodus of players on the roster, they have, what, five open scholarships still? Where do we want them to go from here to fill out the roster for next year, and where do you think they'll end up going?
Well, they need everything.
Right.
I mean, is there any chance that Chilius is bringing any of his recruits from Washington? Are we thinking that...
I'm feeling good about Mama too.
You really want Mama too.
I really want Mama too.
Is it like how? Like, is he actually good enough, or is that the Mama?
It's just the name.
You know who he's better than? He's whatever walk on will inevitably give that scholarship to.
He's better than Christian Foxen.
I mean, okay.
247 has him as the 203rd ranked recruit in the country, 3-star, 6'9", 205. But his name is Mamadou Diarra. So if UConn doesn't get him, it's a wasted opportunity.
I couldn't agree more.
Like when Steve Smith just didn't decide to go play for the Panthers with Steve Smith.
Rude as hell.
If we do have the two Mamadou's Diarra.
They're like one of them is going to have to like go by a middle initial maybe. If they have different middle initials. That's the only thing I can think of.
I hope they have the same middle name.
Their first names are not spelled the same.
They're pronounced the same
though.
But you got to get four letters in before you have the difference.
Hey, remember
what your middle names are?
No. There used to be, I remember when the Cardinals had Rob Moore and Ron Moore on the same team. They both just had their full names on their jerseys.
What did Danielle and Donnie do?
D-O-N
and D-Y-L. They did three random letters.
God, I don't remember that at all.
Now it has to happen just because I'm so curious what ends up on the back of the jersey. Would it just be M-O-U and M-A-M?
Moo.
Mama and Moo.
Mama Moo Diarras.
The kids will have to come up with nicknames for them.
Top two.
Not hopeless.
Oh, no. You're bad people.
there's several spots open on the top five. They can just get in on that.
Well, they have five open roster spots. See,
exactly.
Right?
We could have a new
whatever
top five
guys to bring in.
So let's talk about Blake Harris while we're on this subject, who's another Washington guy who's back on the market, right? And he's a four-star guard. Let's see, 247 has him at 124th, 6'3", 185.
That's a better ranking than Vital, right?
Vital was a three-star guy, so.
I mean, I'll take him. Like, yeah, great.
I mean, we need warm bodies.
Rodney Purvis tweeted out his highlight video with the eyes bulging emoji.
Listen, Perv, if I'm saying, just still being the ambassador that we know and love, just, I enjoy Perv so much. I really do.
Yeah, if Perv can start landing recruits from, like, post-graduation, that's some next-level shit.
Big Ron's going to hate this podcast.
Weeding guys into UConn.
So they absolutely need another guard, at least one. Harris would fit that mold.
Mm-hmm. They need some large people, though.
They need someone who can theoretically at least come in and compete for that starting center job.
Didn't you find some large people?
I think Diarra is that.
Diarra's knees are made out of mashed potatoes, though.
I think he meant Moo Diarra.
No, that's a Diarra. Oh, did you? Did you mean Moo?
No, I meant Mama.
You meant Ma.
See, this is already starting.
This is great.
Mama
this is
Mama
great.
Moo.
I love this. I love this already.
Ma or Moo?
Ma. Ma. He's the one who I think can play center. Moo is not a center.
Now, would you rather see UConn fill their roster, those five guys, with any five guys, or have them go in with maybe one or two more and you get to burn PSA to the ground?
Yo, I am absolutely ready to burn PSA to the ground. If Eric Ayala doesn't come to UConn, I'm going up there and I'm just torching the place.
I hope there's not an arson case in the next several years.
Which
you know
good thing we know lawyers.
Is one of our followers is going to hear that and do it.
What am I, Charles Manson now?
See, if he'll be like, this will impress her.
we have a follower who wants Megan to walk him.
That was the creepiest thing I've ever gotten on the internet. What the fuck was that?
Is Eric Ayala the 5'4" Chinese kid?
Yes.
No.
Yes, he is.
Is it possible to get two grad transfers in a year? Is that a thing that we can do?
Didn't we just do that?
Like yeah, Sterling Gibbs and Sean Miller?
I think that was the joke.
Was it a right. joke?
Sure. Let's go with that.
I mean, frankly, we should probably get four or five.
I meant practically. I mean, obviously we can do it, but practically, can we get two of these guys that are floating around, the Sean Obi types?
We sure. got minutes to offer them.
We got Chili's.
We got a lot of minutes on the table. Do you want to come be the starting center at UConn? Because that's available.
Don't make me go be the starting center.
That you'd have to sit on someone's shoulders, Russ. It would get really uncomfortable. Just would not work out.
If asked. I will do it.
He will serve if asked.
I will serve.
You have to sit on Rebecca Lobo's shoulders, actually.
I would love to.
That would be a Lobo and a half. Because Russ is a half Lobo tall.
I am a half Lobo.
Maybe Chili should just go land Bamba. That'd be helpful.
That would be nice.
That would solve several problems.
Should we read the J. Timothy's menu?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know how every podcast now is sponsored by Blue Apron, and they spend the entire front and middle of the podcast just reading things. So I figure let's pick some random things off the J. Timothy's menu and read them. So you can get butternut squash ravioli, sweet butternut squash ravioli in a delicate brown butter sage cream sauce with dried cranberries, asparagus tips, diced butternut squash, and roasted pepita seeds. All yours for $19.95 at J. Timothy's Tavern. This is fun. Let's do a whole podcast of this. Meech, would you like a short rib grilled cheese, tender bits of beef short ribs, melted provolone cheese with spinach and caramelized onions on white toast with a creamy vodka sauce for dipping?
Remember, the Meech is a moron who doesn't like cheese.
Yeah, can I get that without cheese?
No.
I would
no.
eat that.
No substitutions at J. Timothy's. It's a dime back J. Timothy's policy. I have no
You're
idea if it's
not
true.
Invited.
Probably not true.
Do we want to talk about Wichita State?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Woo.
So it looks like it's basically a done deal, right?
Yeah. So first, I think Meacham should give everyone the no escalators perspective, so Twitter knows how to think, and then we can give like our points of view.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel as strongly as my anonymous other half, but they're bad. Their fans are bad. Their city is bad. Basketball team's fine. They're going to beat us by 30 points next year. They're probably going to make the Sweet 16. It'll be great for that year. They'll probably bring in more money for tournament shares than they, you know, will bring in for TV money. But I hate them and don't want to be associated with them in our conference, and they're bad. So I hate this conference, and we should go home.
I would be in favor of going home. Absolutely.
Correct. Yeah, my official opinion on this is I don't care. I'm looking forward to playing Wichita State this coming season because it would be a more interesting game than 95% of UConn's conference games in this godforsaken league. And if UConn is still in a league with Wichita State in 5 years, then I will have stopped caring about everything on earth.
I will say one more home game would be one home game total, because last year there were like no good home games. So
do you think that they'll go through the AAC hazing of having to lose to ECU?
Oh, is that what it was?
That never happened. Did not
happen. I think playing ECU is the hazing of the AAC. Having to go to fucking whatever town they're in.
But
ECU is actually in a barge in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
I will say, though, that even though Wichita State will beat us by 30 points twice next year, it's going to be very fun to watch the 55-52 win in the AAC tournament. That completely fucks them over.
And I really can't wait for that. It will be interesting to see how mad Greg Marshall gets when UConn hands them an inexplicable postseason loss. Like, does he get Cronin mad?
I hope so. I would love it. I would actually like to have like a legitimate rivalry with a real basketball team. That would be fun. That would be really fun.
The two of them, though, Cronin and Marshall coaching against each other, will be fun.
Oh, that would be delightful.
Yeah, but
although Marshall will probably destroy Cronin.
Correct.
But yeah, probably.
Also, Marshall, be delightful.
Marshall doesn't look like a member of the Lollipop Guild, though. So
he looks like he ate the Lollipop Guild, like in a creepy way, not in a fat person way. Like, I think he feasts on human flesh.
Greg Marshall's front two teeth are fake because his real teeth he shattered some 25 years ago when he accidentally embedded them around another player's eye socket during a men's league game in Richmond.
What?
Oh, my God.
What?
He bit a dude's eye out.
Are you kidding me? Is that real?
So, yes, he will destroy Mick Cronin.
Is that real?
I just
according to USA Today.
That this is exactly what I said about him.
He feasts on his flesh. Literally will eat McCormick.
I'm now pro Wichita State in the AAC.
Well, now that Memphis is not even a basketball team anymore, at least Wichita State will give us another mildly entertaining offense to match up against at least once per year.
Yeah, like from a competitive standpoint, it's fine. Like, it's going to be fine for the next year or two if Marshall stays, maybe a little bit longer. It's just like, but it's another mouth to feed. The conference tournament isn't the conference tournament in Tulsa next year, so it's going to be like 9,000 Wichita State fans.
Oh, God.
So let's do really, really premature predictions for next year. Give me, do they finish above 500?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Do they win 20 games?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But only 20.
I think 22.
I was going to say 22.
How can we say that without seeing their schedule?
Because
Russ, we're making early predictions.
Just making shit up, Russ. God.
Well, I assume part of your 20-win prediction is that those five players can actually play basketball and don't have joints made of mashed potatoes.
No.
Well, and also that I think we'll probably pick up somebody.
The big assumption for me saying 20 games is that Larrier and Gilbert are reasonably healthy. That's the big assumption. So,
yeah,
and that we beat the Wagners and Northeasterns on the schedule.
Correct. We beat ECU. We beat the schools we're actually supposed to beat.
We can have that conversation about every player every time we try and talk about what the team's going to look like next year. Maybe everybody gets hurt and they cancel the season. Mm-hmm. But assuming that Gilbert is back next year, because that's probably what's going to happen.
Like, they canceled this season so that we can all pretend it never happened.
That hurts the narrative. Or I guess it's a new narrative.
It's a new narrative.
Okay.
The narrative is this season never happened.
Right.
Just like that time the Final Four got canceled.
Yeah, let's touch on the women's game real quick. So they lost, obviously, to Mississippi State. Season over. We're taping this on a Wednesday night, so the last HBO show is going to air in like half an hour. So that'll be fucking depressing.
I'm not going to let myself get down about it. You know,
they made the final four.
A crazy amount, and they had a great season, a way better season than we thought we were going to have, and they're poised to be outstanding next year. I'm still excited about that. I'm bummed that they lost, but I'm looking forward to next year.
I'm right there with you. Right there with you. It didn't. I was upset for like 3 minutes, three consecutive minutes after the buzzer, and then I was like, you know what? There's nothing to complain about here. It's not like they played in a way that wouldn't make us proud. It's not like they weren't putting effort in. They just, you know, they're making some stupid mistakes and got a little sloppy. And
I mean, I think the biggest thing about it was Nafisa Collier had the worst game she's ever had at UConn, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm still pretty mad at Saniya for that last play because that was just dumb. Like, that was just really dumb. And it kind of baffles me that wasn't like clear to her that you don't start running the play until there's very little time left. Like, I thought that was really bizarre, but
I'm surprised that she was allowed to shoot.
I don't think that was the play. I'm not necessarily mad that they lost, although I was mad in the moment. I'm more mad that other people get to be happy.
Yeah, that's
where I think we're all at.
The narrative surrounding this game now are just so fucking bad and just lazy and often wrong that is driving me insane.
Yeah, yes. calling it the greatest upset of all time is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Especially since this is following a season in which every single one of those people calling it the greatest upset predicted the team to lose 4 games. Then they lose the first and they're like, this is the greatest upset of all time. A 16 seed is beating a fucking 1 seed in that tournament.
Yeah.
If that one seed wasn't us. It wasn't us on a 100 million game winning streak.
Right, but Mississippi State lost to two seed.
Yeah,
we've lost bigger upsets than that game.
Yeah, if Florida State hits that shot in the opening game and we're on a 32 or whatever game winning streak instead of 111, it's not the greatest upset ever. It's the streak that made it.
If the circumstances were different in a significant way, the response would also have been.
But I'm saying we'd be the same team if Florida State had hit that shot.
Right.
But my point is that streak to be broken by Mississippi State, which is
Mississippi State program, is good.
But it's not a program that we lose to. Who's the last team we lost to? Stanford. Before that, Notre Dame. We don't lose to Mississippi
State. St. John's.
Was it really St. John's?
No, but St. John's game is the biggest upset in women's history. Even if I'm still a little salty about it, it's going to wear off permanently forever by the time the first exhibition game starts and you look at a team that is miles better than this year's team and they're just going to ruin people's lives next year.
Yeah. I mean, they're just going to rattle off another 100 wins. So
I don't want to ruin.
They're going to have an average of like 45 point wins. Like that's going to be.
I don't want to ruin the Adirondack brand by like being nice to a different team. But Mississippi State also played really, really well.
They did. They had a great game.
Their defense was insane.
Really,
it was incredible.
The hell out of UConn defensively.
Yeah, and I mean they played the defense that was exactly meant to beat UConn. They denied those passes to the high post. Their guards were so fast that they made Chung and Kia Nurse look like they'd never played basketball before.
If UConn had won that game and it had been because of that flagrant foul, I would be just as annoyed with sports, probably more annoyed with how sports media handled that game.
The people in the room were like, it's Doris Burke saying, yes, that was absolutely flagrant, and Kara Lawson saying, yes, that's absolutely flagrant. Like, they were sitting there and watching it, so.
Yeah, I don't think it had to be a flagrant, but you have to call a foul when somebody gets fucking elbowed in the throat.
It was ridiculous that they didn't call it to begin with. Like, it was insane. But it also was a flagrant foul. Like, it was.
I mean, they wouldn't have had to call it. Like, they wouldn't even have had to review it had they just called a foul. Nobody would have thought twice about it. She would have taken her 2 shots. We would have had a tie game, and then Mississippi State would have had a different shot to win at the buzzer. But the fact that they let the play go and then let Mississippi State get a full other possession and then went and reviewed it is the dumbest thing in the world. Because women's basketball refs are the worst people on earth.
They had a 6'7" girl who, as much as Gabby can do, like, she kept getting the girls like jumping over her to get passes, and like, I mean, she can do a lot, but that girl's 6'7". Like,
can she be our business coach for the men's team?
She could be the starting center on the men's team.
It's good. It's good.
All right.
But they're going to be great next year, so it's going
to
be fine.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Dime Bad Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you later.